Prime Time replay from Money FM 89.3. Focus, hosted by Howie Lim and Bernard Lim, only on Money FM 89.3.
All diplomatic role between Japan and South Korea looks to be deepening. South Korea's trade ministry urged Japan to accept its request for another round of talks over Tokyo's tighter export controls of three chemicals. Japan said this is over national security concerns, but did not elaborate. Now, these chemicals are key components of smartphones and other advanced technology, and the role seems to be threatening both global microchip and smartphone display supply chains. And joining us right now to tell us a little bit more is Joshua Chambers, managing editor of a Singapore-based media startup Gulf Insider. Well, Joshua, even though Japan has cited national security concern as a reason, experts believe that the spat is related to a dispute going back to World War II over its compensation for wartime forced laborers. What's your take on this?
Well, it's hard to see what national security concerns Japan has with South Korea, which has never in its history acted as an international aggressor in the region. This is what economists call a black swan, an unexpected event that will have complicated effects on the whole region. And that's something that's a worry in an already troubled global economy. But yes, you mentioned World War II. Let's take a look at the history. Korea is demanding compensation, what we're describing as forced labor, but we could equally just describe as slavery. Over 150,000 people were captured from their homes, moved to Japan, and forced to work in brutal factory jobs. And companies like Mitsubishi benefited enormously from this labor, but never paid the cost. The Japanese government understandably wants this chapter, its activities in the Second World War and the empire it had beforehand, to be closed. But the people who were captured and forced to work in these factories remain around. They are unhappy. And the Korean government is in a stronger position than it was historically and is now able to defend its citizens. So it's pushing Japan, it's pushing these companies to pay those people whose lives were ruined some compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look even broader, because colonialism was always really brutal. You know, the British, the French, the Dutch all conducted horrible acts in the region, but Japan, not forget, a particularly brutal occupier. Tens of thousands of young women were kidnapped, transported to Japan, and forced to work in brothels for over 5 years. And the Japanese government has also recently started to change its definitions under some political pressure by even suggesting that some women were willing to be treated in this way. Japan is trying to play down its legacy of the Second World War. Korean citizens are upset, and quite understandably, the Korean government then is stepping in to try and get a fair settlement. But when it comes to these issues of nationalism and national identity, it does get incredibly complicated and very hard to defuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, South Korea's Supreme Court, Joshua, last year ordered two Japanese companies to compensate the wartime workers in the ruling that Tokyo said violated international law. Well, crucially, Japan believes the issue of compensation was settled under a 1965 treaty. I mean, NHK reported yesterday that Japan is considering taking the dispute to the International Court of Justice. How do you see this being resolved?
Welcome to Trump world, where might is right and strength is everything. This is how we see trade disputes taking place, with countries placing big tariffs on other countries and trying to squeeze them. Now, the International Court of Justice would be one avenue that could see some resolution. But also, let's not forget that these international institutions are becoming increasingly unimportant, where the United States is showing that it prefers to operate in a different way. Both nations do have a history of pragmatism, resolution of these sorts of issues, but this is about nationalism, and neither will want to back down. And let's not also forget that Korea has elections coming up in April next year, and it will be very, very difficult for the Korean government to back down when there's such an emotional case and when people who were really directly hurt by this remain around and are able to put really strong pressure on the government, and the Japanese government doesn't want to accept its legacy. What will be helpful is by putting it into this sort of international body, it pushes the pause button on the whole thing. The tariffs could be reduced, the government could have a conversation, and at least some of the heat, which has really built up, could be taken out of the issue by slowing the process down.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Japan is hoping to achieve by limiting export controls of the three chemicals?
Well, this cripples Korea's electronics industry. 90%, over 90% of these chemicals are supplied by Japan to the rest of the world, and they're absolutely essential. As I understand it, big microchip companies and electronics companies, when they're manufacturing their goods. Now, it is pretty unclear whether South Korea does have a stockpile on this, but if that does run low, there'd be shortages, and then people in factories would have nothing to do and nothing to create. If you can't create goods that you're selling, it's a massive impact on your entire economy.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, of course, South Koreans are boycotting Japanese products due to the escalating row. Would this amount to any real impact on Japan?
Last year, Koreans were the largest percentage of tourists to visit Japan in the first half of the year. So Koreans altogether boycott visiting Japan, we can see a big impact on the Japanese economy as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, both Japan and South Korea are allies of the U.S., and the U.S. looks reluctant to mediate for now. Realistically, what can the U.S. do to improve the situation?
What will the U.S. do is perhaps the question, because does the U.S. want to get involved in other trade wars? It quite enjoys them, doesn't it? I mean, this isn't in keeping with Trump's vision of America first, America focusing on what it can get and only intervening when there is that benefit. Trump pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. He doesn't really want to help either country. He has a beef both with Japan and with Korea. He thinks that both economies are undermining the American economy in some way and playing the game, playing the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I feel that Trump won't get involved. He'll just watch, and it's up to these two nations to prove that they can, without American involvement, find a settlement and act as responsible international players.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think, by the way, are the biggest losers in a tech war like this?
Well, outside of these two nations, of course, some of the biggest losers are the peaceful, trading, interconnected nations like Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
Our economy is hit by the China trade war. The government said that this could cause a real slowdown next year. If there's Korea starting to struggle as well as a result of these tariffs, that's further pain for the region and for Singapore, which relies very heavily on an interconnected economy and, of course, the rule of law in international trade as well. So this is why it's a black swan event.
Mm-hmm.
These tariffs themselves have these many unintended consequences, and they cause a ripple right across the entire region that could cause real stress and pain for many people outside of Korea and Japan.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking with Joshua Chambers, managing editor of Gulf Insider, and turning our attention right now, Joshua, to Down Under. I mean, U.S. and Australian troops are participating in a military exercise in northeast Australia that marks one of the biggest, one of the world's biggest war games. I mean, these exercises, called Talisman Sabre, are held every 2 years, but they now have a new unwanted partner, as in China. Now, for the second time in a row, a Chinese civilian's ship has been sent to the waters off the course to kind of spy on the exercises. I mean, is this normal? I mean, is this allowed? And what does China hope to gain by viewing the military exercise from a distance?
It is, I guess, allowed. Let me tell you a story. So every few years, the United Kingdom government tests its nuclear weapons by firing them from a submarine and trying to hit a target on the other side of the world. And in the last test in 2012, the Russians had two spy ships in the vicinity monitoring the launch, and we can see now, according to records that were released in this book called The Silent Deep, that the Russians watched and they telegrammed the submarine straight afterwards saying, "Bravo November, this is a Russian warship. We sincerely congratulate the crew on the successful completion of your ballistic missile test." So in all of these activities, if you can have a spy ship watching a test of nuclear weapons, probably the most sensitive and important military weapon that any nation could ever have, then certainly if you're having a big public display of the strength of your military, then the Chinese are allowed to park in international waters and pull out their binoculars and have a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, though, these sorts of activities are actually done, not secret tests at all, but to demonstrate strength, to demonstrate that the US would defend Australia and that Australia wants to be a player in the South China Sea and defend the international rule of law and the laws-based order there.
Mm-hmm. Well, meanwhile, China and Vietnam, they are involved in yet another dispute in the South China Sea. I mean, reports of a standoff between Vietnamese and Chinese naval forces in disputed waters in the South China Sea. I mean, the U.S. had earlier accused the Chinese military of carrying out missile tests. How serious is this latest round of disputes, or is this turning to be like a new normal?
Well, China's Coast Guard does tend quite often to be a long way from its coastline. You will find Chinese Coast Guard harassing Indonesian fishing boats off the coast of the Natuna Islands, to ramming ships just off the waters of the Philippines. In this particular dispute, let's not forget in these waters that there are very lucrative oil deposits. And Russian and Spanish companies have actually paid Vietnam for the right to be gathering this oil. What you've seen is that the Russians are pulling out the oil, but they're very worried that they would get sanctions. And the Spanish company has actually already found that it did have sanctions applied on it and had to stop drilling for oil, even though it paid for the right. So this is really a dispute around money. It's a dispute around who gets this oil, Vietnam or China. Both are going to want to be really tough in trying to get what it can. Now, Vietnam is a very tough nation that, of course, did successfully beat China in a war. They are not to be trifled with. And unlike the trade disputes we discussed earlier, the United States does want to play a role in the South China Sea militarily. It remains the most powerful military in the world. So at the moment, it ratchets up the tension in the region. But we have to watch how the United States pulls behind Vietnam and how much U.S. support is given to the Vietnamese to defend territory they're claiming as their own.
As always, thank you very much for coming on. Joshua Chambers, Managing Editor of a Singapore-based media startup, Gulf Insider. And this has been AJ Insider, right here on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.